is Patriots Playbook.
Go Stack Guts Combat. Odds, 51, mirror.
Patriots Playbook, yeah. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody throw.
Parentheses
stay on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Patriots even, 51 greats. Even, 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go.
And welcome inside the Playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook here as we work on game week 3 for the Patriots, and the Pats take on the Miami Dolphins at Gillette Stadium coming up this Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern time. This is going to be a good one today. I've just got a good feeling about this one today because, first of all, we say hello to Mike Parenti from Patriots Football Weekly, who sticks around and joins us for the opening hour of the program on Wednesdays. Mike, did we learn anything from PFW today? I mean, did we make any big revelations or any huge news scoops that I need to know about?
On our show?
Yeah.
Ooh, we don't really reveal too much in our show. I wouldn't take anything you hear from those first 2 hours and apply it to what you're going to hear today for the next two. So, yeah, I'd probably just wipe out those last 2 hours from your memory. Thankfully, I missed the first hour. If you heard yesterday's show, I had to actually host and fill in for Fred.
Yes,
that apparently
did.
Was an abomination, so we won't even go there.
No, not at all, not at all.
Well, our reader feedback, or I should say our listener feedback, is not too positive right
was
now,
was not
John.
Good?
It's kind of hot and cold.
They're being too tough on you.
I don't pay attention to the media, John. I don't read what's in the papers. I don't listen to what's on the radio. I don't pay attention to that stuff.
And how long have you been in the media?
Ooh, about 7 years.
Yeah, see, I thought that.
I've already learned by now to tune us out.
Yeah.
See, right. I learned the hard way, but we have to tune ourselves out.
Kind of have
7 years it took.
Yeah, I know. Well, hey, it is what it is, right? One of the things that I want to deal with today, by the way, is Mike will be with us until for the first hour of the program today. And then in our 3 o'clock hour, one and only Vic Carucci from NFL.com will join us here on the program. And then we'll also get into the conference calls with the Dolphins. We'll hear from Chad Pennington and Dolphins head coach Tony Sperano in hour number 2 today. So that gives you a bit of the agenda. But right off the bat, I kind of went through last night several websites and all of them dealing with football. You know, everybody's got their favorites, right? I think last year we even did an email question, you know, what's your favorite, football website other than Patriots.com? Let's be somewhat self-serving here, right? And we got, the usual, NFL.com is good, and ProFootballTalk.com is good, and FootballInjuries.com, and several really good ones, which is fine. I have to admit, though, that just about every football website that's out there has some kind of a power ranking. Don't you think? I mean, have you
ESPN has one. Sports Illustrated, Dr. Z does his own power ranking.
Yeah, everybody's got a fixation with who ranks best. I mean, it's sort of, I guess, the whole continuation of the college top 25. Everybody considers the AP top 25 and the USA Today top 25 as being the Bible, and it's fun to talk about, and I guess sort of gauge the relative strengths of teams collegiately because you don't really have a true championship game, although some would say the BCS is that. But, it gives you a lot of conjecture.
There's always debate at the end.
Yes.
To some degree.
Always room for debate. And so when the NFL began to become more widespread than it already is with its proliferation of websites out there, they decided to follow along the collegiate model, even though, of course, the NFL has a playoff system and a very good one in place, and they only allow their top 12 teams into the playoffs, which I think certainly gives a lot of credibility to the regular season. And, it wouldn't hurt, I think, if they let it 2 more teams in per conference, but that's another story for another day. What I'm getting to here is that every football website now has their own version of these power rankings because people have and fans have a fixation with who is the best, who is number one, and who is the last, 32 out of 32. We know, Mike, just from having covered this team over the last several years, that the Patriots have been up at the top of most of the power rankings for the last several years just because of what they've done on the field, and perhaps deservedly so, although there was a time, I think it was in 2004, during the last Super Bowl year where they spent some time out of the top spot, and a lot of Patriots fans took offense at that. And I think the Patriots were able to utilize some of that as the whole, boulder on the shoulder thing, right, the whole disrespecting. And sort of along those lines today, I went and checked 6 different websites that have power rankings that I knew of right off the bat. The ones that I know that, I can get to that easy enough, right? Not one of them. Not one of them last night anyway. And I haven't checked. There were three of them, or two of them that I did not check yet again today. I checked them last night. But not one of them had the Patriots ranked in the top 10.
You sure ESPN.com didn't have the Patriots in the top 10?
Well, actually, the last I checked, that was one of them. They had them ninth.
Okay.
Ninth. But just for an example here, and this is part of the reason why I'm really glad we have Vic Carucci on today, because NFL.com does, you know, their power rankings too. You know, they have the Dallas Cowboys ranked number one, which is I really have no argument with. Based on what we saw that Monday night game, fantastic game, up and down the field. You know, the two defenses should be ashamed of themselves, I think.
But, I agree.
You know, you can't argue the offense. They can score. They can move the ball. They're exciting to watch. And, of course, the ratings, and I don't know if anybody's talking about this or not, but the ratings, it was the highest rated television program on cable ever. It beat out.
No kidding. I didn't know that.
It beat out the Patriots Ravens game last December.
It's weird because it seems like that record falls every year. Is it just me?
No, it's not just you. It does seem like it falls every year, but I think it just it adds credibility to the fact that the NFL is still hot.
Yeah.
And it is on top of all of sport right now, surrounding this globe that we live on. The National Football League has well overtaken baseball and anything else that is there, and that includes soccer. I mean, I realize that we get a lot of listeners from Europe and Asia and all over, especially a lot from England. And I know that the footy over there is very popular, as well it should be, because it's played at a very high level. But the National Football League, at least certainly in America, and I think it's continuing to catch on elsewhere, which is I'm a little disappointed that NFL Europe folded, to be honest with you. But it dominates here in this country. And the football game Monday night between the Cowboys and the Eagles was the top-rated cable television program of all time, which is just it's stupid, but it was. Now, the Cowboys are ranked number one in the NFL.com power ranking. The Patriots are not number two, nor are they three, nor are they five, nor are they 10, nor are they 12. They have the top 12 ranked, and they have it under the heading of in the hunt. You know, teams that I believe they feel like can contend, right?
Right.
Then they have middle of the pack, and then they have need work. The Patriots, at 2-0, are in the middle of the pack. And they're the only 2-0 team that's in the middle of the pack.
Well, I would say that probably is predicated on the fact that Tom Brady's not here anymore. Though, I would ask you where the Titans are ranked. Because Tennessee is now with a backup quarterback as well in Kerry Collins. So if you're going to put Tennessee, they're 2-0.
The Tennessee Titans are ranked 9th.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a little...
Can I give you a few examples of where I think this thing is really out of whack?
Yes.
Okay. On NFL.com, and I'm sure some of our fans who have surfed over there are, you know, saying, what the, you know,
right.
When they look at it. The Buffalo Bills are ranked 5th. The Titans are 9th. The Colts at 1-1, and of course they're going to miss Bob Sanders now for 4 to 6 weeks. That was the story today out of Indianapolis with the high ankle sprain. Colts are ranked 7th. I'll read it to you. Cowboys 1, Giants 2. No qualms with that, to be honest with you. Packers 3, Panthers 4, Bills 5, Steelers, Colts, Broncos, Titans, Saints. That's the top 10.
I'm not sure how the Colts get in the top 10. At 1-1 and barely at 1-1 after having to squeak out a victory over Minnesota, which I think is highly overrated to begin with.
How about the Arizona Cardinals ranked 12th? Ahead of the Patriots.
You know, that could be the surprise element there. You know, the thing with Arizona and Buffalo, both at 2-0, have very good point differentials right now. They're scoring a lot of points and not allowing a lot of points. What the Patriots are doing is they're kind of winning right now through 2 weeks, winning these close, relatively low-scoring games, and that's probably what people are looking at. They're not all that impressed because, you know what happens too, John? I think people hold them to the same standard as last year. They set the bar so high by going 16-0 and breaking a point record in the NFL that now just being 2-0 with two close, hard-fought wins apparently is not enough to crack a top 10 in a power ranking. So well, I think that's where it comes from. I'm not justifying it. I'm not saying that I agree with that because I don't. Right now, first of all, if you're going to put top 10, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 undefeated teams.
Right.
Those should be the top 10 unless somebody has really, really looked good at 1-1. And right now, the 1-1 teams, who has looked great? The Jets haven't looked great at 1-1. Indianapolis, no. Oakland, obviously not. Philly, maybe. Maybe you could put Philly over in Arizona and say, well, Philly is a superior team to Arizona or a superior team to Tennessee. So even at 1-1, I would put Philly in there. Would you put Chicago in or New Orleans? No. I mean, New Orleans has allowed more points than it's scored at 1-1.
I mean, if you want to put the 2-0 teams in there, I have no problem putting the Bills in that top 12 at 2-0 because they are 2-0. But I don't know how the Patriots become the only 2-0 team put in, and ranked in the middle of the pack. And they're ranked in the middle of the pack with a couple of teams that are 0-2 in Jacksonville and Minnesota.
Yeah, and it depends on your interpretation of what the power rankings are. Is it how good they are now or what you see long term? Because my guess is people think long-term, this is not going to last. They're 2-0, but they're going to fade. They don't have Brady. And so we're not going to put them 3 or 4 because we don't think they're one of the 4 or 5 best teams. See, and that's the problem I have. If you're going to update it every week, you have to do it based on what happened that week. You can't look ahead to the next week and say, well, they're going to probably lose this game or they're going to lose a few here and there, so we're just going to bump them down. Well, when they do lose those few, then you can bump them down.
Well, that's why I think, you know, because each of these polls, and again, it's all conjecture and it's all,
it's all subjective and
it gives us cannon fodder to talk about in the middle of the week. But here's the thing. It's supposed to be a snapshot of each of these teams and where they rank relative to everybody else after last week's games. That's really supposed to be it, not based on what long-term prognosis would be. I can almost see it. If you kept to that particular standard. But the problem that I have here, and this is what I think, you know, we talked about last week, where the Patriots should benefit from this because mm-hmm. they're so good at turning this around and using it to their advantage. The Patriots could look at this and say, what a huge snub, because again, here's, you know, all of these people that supposedly know what the heck they're talking about, not giving any credit where credit may be due to the defense, to Matt Castle certainly, to Randy Moss, to Bill Belichick, to anybody on this team, thinking that, oh, just because, again, Tom Brady is down, this team can't possibly be any good at 2-0.
Well, I'd also have to ask you what comments are written under those power rankings. Was this NFL.com, John? John?
Yes.
This was NFL.com's power rankings?
Yes, it is.
Okay, because I'm going to take a look at it right now and just kind of see what, you know, because usually they put a line or two to kind of justify their reasoning for it. So
yeah,
I'm just curious as to what they had to say about the Patriots and why they may be 12 or why they may not be higher than that.
All right. Well, he only has comments to the top 12.
Okay.
And then he's got the Patriots lumped in the middle of the pack in alphabetical order behind the Jacksonville Jaguars, Minnesota Vikings, Chicago Bears, Baltimore Ravens, Atlanta Falcons.
I mean, I wouldn't get too bent out of shape over that because I think on a national level, a lot of credit has been given to the way the defense has played, particularly in the red zone where they've had two key stops in as many weeks. And also credit to special teams. What we saw Steven Gostkowski do on Sunday was phenomenal.
Right.
To kick all four of his field goals and kick 5 touchbacks, 6 of his kickoffs went into the end zone.
Right.
And the only one that was brought out, Leon Washington, was dropped at the 20-yard line by Ray Ventrone. So they dominated on special teams and, for all intents and purposes, dominated on defense. And that's going to make Matt Castle's job a little bit easier to go out there when you have great field position every time. And as a defense, you go out there and they're not starting any drive deeper than the 20-yard line.
Pretty
so, it was a great team victory. And I think there has been credit given to that. And that's the biggest thing right now. But when people
but I don't
are
think
doing
it's reflecting here, though, Mike.
No, it's
here's
not
problem.
Because
it's not reflecting in the national perception of this team.
Probably not, because what happens on a national level is they're looking at all 32 teams. So they're taking things that stand out the most. You know, they're taking a big game-breaking play or a player who comes out and, you know, maybe catches 3 touchdowns in a game. It's got to be something that's eye-popping, I think, to grab national headlines.
Well,
winning
maybe
methodically and just winning close-knit games where you just dominate and you sort of, I don't want to say dink and dunk your way down the field, but when you do that, it doesn't get a lot of attention nationally. It really doesn't.
Okay. Well, then maybe it'll take then a few
not
more
saying
weeks
that's right.
Get
not no, saying that's right, but that I think that's I just think that's the thought process on the national level.
Okay.
And there are a lot of surprises. Like Denver at 2-0 is a surprise to a lot of people, myself included. Arizona at 2-0, pretty good story right now. So that's why I think that stuff's getting the national attention, because the Cardinals have never been good.
That's right.
Now all of a sudden the Cardinals are 2-0. Denver, we all thought was going to be terrible. Denver is now 2-0. Tennessee, with everything that happened with Vince Young, managed to win another game. So that stuff's starting to, and that stuff's starting to get the attention. And the Bills being 2-0, a big surprise. You know, you got to kind of do something different, I think, to get the national attention. Pats have been good for years. Everybody knows they're good. I think sometimes you slip under the radar.
Well, that may be the case then. And then that's kind of where I was going with today's question of the day. And again, the email address, webradio@patriots.com. Same email address as PFW in progress, but it's webradio@patriots.com. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number if you want to join in the conversation. But I would ask you, other than the Patriots, what team has impressed you with their start? So if you can give me, say, your number one in your own power rankings, best team in the NFL right now, and what team has surprised you the most with their start? Fair enough for a question today?
What has surprised me the most would probably be Buffalo.
Yeah, I would
agree with that one. I've never been big on Buffalo. 2-0 right now. We'll see where they go. Who's been the most impressive? Probably
I'm going to go
Dallas.
Dallas is my number one right now. And although I am a real stickler for, you know, until they're beaten, the champion should stay at top. So I think that certainly means that the Giants deserve consideration to be at
the top. Giants defensively have been very impressive. Offensively, they've left some points on the field. But defensively, they've picked up right where they left off without Umanure and Strahan. And a lot of people thought they were going to have a hard time with that. And right. So far, the sack numbers are all there. So, and that's another team, again, that has been impressive. Hey, John, we do have a phone call
In
right now. John in L.A. on the phone. John, how are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad.
Good. I called in earlier at PFW to let you know that you did a great job hosting yesterday. It's a good job, Mike.
Thanks. I appreciate that. That's three fans.
Hey!
We have a little bit of a groundswell going here. Finally, some positive feedback. I appreciate that.
It's an actual groundswell. It's not an Eric Scalavino groundswell.
Right, this is a real groundswell this time. That's right. What's on your mind today?
Well, I was going to say something about Lawrence Maroney, but I first wanted to just chime in and say that Buffalo is, to me, a great story.
I agree.
That was making me happy when I thought that maybe the Patriots would be totally out of it because I at least wanted the Jets not to win the division.
Right.
But, you know, it's nice to see the Bills. I mean, they did well last year with a ton of injuries. They had another good draft, it seems like, and they're getting some of the guys back, the young guys back that were injured last year. So I'm not that surprised that they're doing well, but I was kind of surprised to be Jacksonville.
Yeah, I was too. I thought Jacksonville would come back after losing the opener and a tough loss for them, and I thought that game, that was in Jacksonville, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, I assumed that would be a pretty good comeback victory for the Jaguars, and I put some faith in their defense, and I just didn't see it on Sunday. Buffalo has scored 54 points through 2 weeks, a plus 28 in point differential. I mean, that's among the best. Actually, you know who has the best in the league is the New York Giants, plus 37. Mm-hmm. 57 points scored, 20 allowed.
Hey, Mike, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
When you're, I totally agree with you on your philosophy about splitting, that you shouldn't split your allegiances. You're a Giants fan.
Yes.
And that's awesome. but because you're working for the Patriots and you've been covering them for a while,
mm-hmm.
What is your feeling like when you're watching a game? Are you like, do you want them to win?
It doesn't bother me either way.
I mean,
it really makes no difference.
Yeah, you're just, it's just.
I'll be completely honest with you. I think now. See, I started off at a small newspaper in Woonsocket when I came out and out of college in 2001, and to me, it was easier to cover the team not being a fan because I wasn't writing with my heart necessarily. I was writing. I just gave it an objective analysis. Here's what I see from the outside looking in. Never grew up watching much football outside of watching the Giants. Never really cared much what the Patriots did. So there was no emotional investment in it for me. So I could just watch and say, hey, this is what I see. Now, covering them, and I was on the road for 5 years from 02 through 07, and those are some of the best football games I've ever seen because those were among the best teams I've ever seen. So it's a lot of fun, no question about it. Now, I don't root for anything. I just go out there and watch and see and want to see what happens. I root for a good game, to be completely honest with you. If you're covering the game and you have to write about it, you want something great to write about.
Absolutely.
And they've given us a lot of great games over the years to write about. Comebacks
or
even some blowouts, some of those big games where they come off a tough week of adversity and they wipe somebody out. Those are fun stories. That's what you really root for as a writer. You root for a good story.
Let me also suggest here that when you cover a team for an extended period of time,
mm-hmm.
it becomes easier to root for the story. And in effect, it almost seems like you're rooting for the team to do well because you can create better stories out of it, even though you may not necessarily be rooting for the team. But that's kind of how it ends up evolving.
You know, like you go back to last year, whatever had happened that last game was a great story. Whether they go 60 in a row and they lose the last game, it's great theater one way or the other. So, and to clarify, I mean, working for the team I don't think means you have to be a fan of the team. That's not what you're paid to do. You're just paid to give your objective analysis and cover what you see, and that's all I'm trying to do here is just tell you what I see. Right. Hopefully it makes sense. At some point through this, you know, first 3 or 4 weeks, hopefully some of those things have made sense.
One quick point about Maroney.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes the dancing thing is a little bit overblown because a lot of the times I watched the game twice. That's, you know, it's not like I had a film room or something.
Right.
What I was seeing and what I saw sometimes last year, yeah, sometimes he's dancing behind the line, but sometimes he's dancing behind the line because there are defensive linemen in the back.
Exactly, right.
And it seemed to me, especially in the game this past week, I mean, obviously, I guess it seems like Belichick and the coaching staff disagreed because they did have him on the bench. But I just kept seeing, well, God, the offensive line just happened to, on a lot of the runs that he's doing, not be getting it done. And so he's trying to avoid guys in the backfield.
Yeah, to be honest with you, John, I think you're 100% correct. You have to watch every play individually and see why he was doing what he was doing. Where there are four guys in his face and he had to dance. Now, if you see a play where there's a big hole and if you run straight ahead, you get it, but he dances, then that's a problem. But I think, right. what, like you have said, and I think what the point you're trying to make is he's kind of been pigeonholed now as a guy who just dances all the time.
Right.
And for whatever reason, we don't really seem to look and see why he's doing it. And that is unfair at times. Now, there were some plays in that game on Sunday where he probably could have hit the hole a little bit harder, and yeah. I think he left some opportunities out there. But again, there are some plays where the line protection breaks down, the hole's not opened up, and he has to do it, and he has to cut back. And it doesn't always work out that way. But I just think people do expect a little bit more from him. As far as him being benched or not put back in the game, I'm not sure the reason behind that. Some of the guys in the show thought it might have been punishment. I just think at the time Jordan was running the ball well, so why the Jets had no answer for Jordan in that game.
So why take him out? There's absolutely nothing to the shoulder.
Well, no, he wasn't out there in the practice field today. So okay. Now we don't know. We'll see on Wednesday, or rather tomorrow, or actually I should say Friday. I correct myself again. On Friday when the actual injury report comes out where they list your status, and we'll see what happens. And we'll see if he's out there tomorrow as well. I think there was something to the shoulder. The guys on PFW in progress, when we talked about it yesterday, Andy and I, said maybe part of it was that they think, you know, are you hurt or are you injured? Which is it? And maybe they want him to be more durable. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's all speculation. I didn't really get into that too
much.
To me,
the biggest problem with Lawrence Ramone, and that's what we talked about on yesterday's show. And one of the biggest problems that I have, and I know a lot of other people have with Lawrence, is the fact that he just does not seem to be durable. And because of that, he won't really be the every down 1,000-yard type of rusher that the Patriots are looking for. He could be a great addition, a good complement, if you have him and Lamont Jordan and Sammy Morris together, and they might each go for 500 or 600 yards, you know, on the season. That's pretty good, but mm-hmm. You're not going to get an individual that's going to set the tempo. You're not going to get a Corey Dillon type who can be a guy that can be a bell cow type of thing, you know?
Are you saying that that's what you believe, or are you saying some people believe that?
I think a lot of people believe that. It's also what I believe. I believe that he is incredibly fragile.
So far, he has been, John. You have to admit that.
No, I certainly admit that he's been fragile. That's very true. But in terms of is he the type of back who can't – I mean, I don't know. I think we saw in the second half of last year that he's a guy who can be a regular 12 to 1,400.
Well, we've seen flashes of it, though.
I don't think he'll ever be healthy enough.
We've seen flashes of it.
I don't think he will be.
Fair.
He had a big, big December, and he played well in the postseason. Now, can you do that for 16 weeks?
Right.
No.
That's when he becomes a 1,200-yard back.
Yet.
Certainly not yet. But
certainly
when, though?
Yet.
I mean, this is now, what, his third year?
Yes.
I mean, at some point, you know, as a first-round pick.
He's got to come through.
It's got to start happening.
As a first-round pick.
It's got to start
But he's got to stay healthy enough. And he right now is not able to do that. And I don't
Same
know
thing with Ben Watson.
Him,
Ben Watson has not been healthy either.
That's also true.
It's another
and
problem.
You can certainly make a legitimate complaint against Benjamin Watson and his quote-unquote durability. It's not there right now. I think he's gotten better, Maroney, that is, at hitting the hole. I think we've seen him better at attacking the hole rather than dancing to the side. But
I agree.
From time to time, Michael, as you just said, he does have a tendency to do that. And a lot of that, I think, is because the blocking schemes break down.
You know, I do think there's a reason why they kept 5 running backs. Let's put it that way. There
they
has to
depth.
Be some concern.
And
well,
they
want
like
depth,
they
but
them.
They feel like there's at any moment, Maroney could be out.
That's right.
And you got to have
okay
a backup plan.
Is.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I really like these running backs. I don't really care about Heath Evans, so he has a nice attitude.
Yeah, he's more of a blocker. He may be
versatile.
A goal line guy, but he's not. I mean, when you talk about the four guys who will carry the ball the most, clearly it's Faulk, Morris, Maroney, and Lamont Jordan. And I think what you see, the way they use Jordan on Sunday is a great change of pace. You have a guy run the ball the entire first half. Now, most of it was circumstantial because of Maroney's injury, but you put in a fresh back in the third quarter, and I think this cannot be overstated. A tired defense on the other side versus a guy who has fresh legs. I mean, the edge goes to New England there. I don't think that's a coincidence.
And I love Falk, and I would like to see Maroney used more in the passing game, because every time they have, every now and then, the last 2 years, he's been very dynamic.
Well, he does have the explosiveness, but I think that's Falk's niche. I would more often than not give the ball to Falk in that spot, because he will get up the field faster.
Yeah. I mean, when you have someone of Kevin Falk's. Yeah, when you have someone of Falk's ability, why would you want to take a chance on somebody who doesn't quite yet measure up? I mean, if you don't have Kevin Falk, that's another story.
I see Maroney as more of the guy who should be getting the tough yards in addition to using his speed.
Absolutely.
Kind of like a younger, more healthy Larry Johnson who could do both. But
I'd love to see Lawrence Maroney, consistently be in there and get the ball on first and second down.
Yes.
And we don't see that yet. We really don't. There's no durability factor built in, so I've seen him come in for one play on first down and then leave on second down.
Right.
So that's why I'm questioning his durability, and certainly play call has a lot to do with it. But I'd like to see them stick with him for a while.
If he gave them a reason to stick with him, then they would. I think that's what it comes down to.
That's right.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. It's a great show.
Thank you, John. Take care.
Thanks for the phone call. Hey, we're off to a good start there.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. So there you go, 508-543-7482, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number if you want to call us with your question as well. We'll get to it. And again, the email question of the day has to do with your perception of the best in the league right now. Just the snapshot after a couple of weeks. Who's your best team? Who's the top of your power ranking? And what is the biggest surprise? That could also be in a negative sense. I mean, I think we both kind of agree that Buffalo is certainly a surprise right now.
Yeah.
The Cowboys probably deserve to be up at the top, although you can certainly make a great strong case for the Giants. Especially if you believe in the whole, hey, champions until dethroned. Although, didn't seem like they ever did that when the Patriots were champs, did it?
Well, depending on, I'd have to go back and look. But to be honest with you, yeah, I kind of agree with your point about the Giants a bit. And everybody's going to think I'm just being a Giants homer. But the point differentials really say a lot.
I got to admit, I'm
they're
I'm
a plus
impressed.
37. And that really, I don't think anybody really is close.
And they're going to
I'm taking a look right now. Well, no, Arizona is a plus 31.
Okay.
Those have been the two best in point differential. Now, it's not all on point differential. I understand that. But when you have, at this point in the season when it's so close, and you've only had 2 weeks, so there's a lot of 2-0 teams, that's something you can look at. You can look at how many points they're scoring and how many points they're allowing and how they're winning those games. And if you've watched both Giants games, they've dominated both games. Now, the score against Washington was a lot closer than it should have been because they left some points on the field and they screwed up some drives at the end. But they put away St. Louis in the second half, which they should do. So right now between them and Dallas, I would say probably the two most dominant teams at this point, Arizona with you would throw in there as well. Disappointment. Yep. There are a lot of disappointments, though, on the other side.
Yeah, there are some disappointments. I think to me the biggest disappointment, at least one of the biggest disappointments at this point in time, if we look at this from a negative perspective, we're always negative. We're, negative nabobbers.
I'm Mr. Negative here. You didn't get the memo on that?
No. Yeah. You more so than anybody else around there?
Well,
I'd have to throw, I think, Cleveland in that mix. I think I'd have to throw Jacksonville in that mix at 0-2. And I guess probably also San Diego and Seattle in that mix, although Seattle has been decimated by the injury bug. And so I think they've got a legitimate reason for being 0-2. But I think you'd have to throw all those teams in the disappointed mix.
Well, I put San Diego number one because they were my Super Bowl pick from the AFC.
Wow.
And they got hosed on Sunday, no
was
question about it.
Was that before you knew that Sean Merriman was banged up?
Yeah, I mean, they've got so many Pro Bowl caliber defensive players. I did not think that one pass rusher would kill them as much as apparently it has, because they have allowed 65 points in two games. And they are at a -3 in point differential. And they got screwed on Sunday, no question. But they also had chances to make plays to finish that game and didn't make them in the end. So you can't bury your head in the sand after a bad call and say, woe is us, and just roll over. And I'm not saying they rolled over, but they didn't make the plays. And Cleveland, John, I sort of disagree. I've never been big on Cleveland. I don't know what to think of Romeo Crennel as a coach. Not thoroughly impressed thus far. I did not expect much from them, but I certainly expected a little bit more from San Diego.
What do you attribute the 10-6 season to last year?
I think they caught fire at the end, and you know, for whatever reason, they were scoring some points and moving the football. That was the biggest thing. Defensively, I have never been impressed, and that's from a guy who is supposed to be a defensive coach in Cornell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now, right now, they've allowed 38 points. They've scored 16. Through two games, and they have been absolutely abysmal.
Yeah, the fact that they have only scored 16 points, I think, is the hugest the biggest disappointment, because Derek Anderson had an unbelievable year last year.
I'm also a little surprised that Kansas City lost to Oakland as badly as they did, because we saw Kansas City, and that's true, but we saw Kansas City come in here and play a hard fought game, and then go to Oakland against a team that's by all accounts trying to get its coach out of there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where's the focus and where's the determination in Oakland? They come out, they pasted Kansas City. Kansas City is worse than I thought. That's the surprise. Worse than I thought.
Here's another team that I think probably deserves to be thrown in that mix is also the St. Louis Rams. They've got all kinds of problems, and now you've got Scott Linehan already being talked about as being on the hot seat. And I was listening today to a national broadcast where they said that Georgia Rosenblum, who, of course, passed away in the offseason, one of her, believe it or not, apparently one of, I don't want to say it was her dying wish, but it was one of her last bequests of her family, in taking over the team, was that they give Linehan an entire one more season minimum to try to right the ship, because apparently she really liked him a lot. And now her own son, who has taken over the operations of that football team, is already saying, no, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, screw it, she's dead.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly
really what they're saying.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like going, wow, that is, I think, somewhat significant. And to add to the problems here, the Rams are for sale.
Yeah.
And so that team is in a real bad way right now. And I don't think that people thought it was going to be as bad as it really is. But the Rams right now could be the worst team in the entire NFL. And that's saying something when you throw the Chiefs and the Dolphins in there.
Well, I hate to say that you should go against your own mother's dying wish, but he's running a business too. And if he legitimately feels that
he's the one left running the business.
Yeah, and if he feels they're better off without Linehan, then who would we to say no?
I suppose.
And it just might be. But you know what? At the same time, there's just not enough talent there. There are some talented players, but it's not a talented team. Yeah, Steven Jackson's a very good player. That we understand. Torrey Holt's a game breaker.
I can't figure out how the Rams fell so far so fast, to be quite honest with you.
Defensively, they've never been great. They have been good at times, and they've worked hard over the years to improve that image on defense, because they were always considered a finesse team that could not lay people out.
Right.
Even the year they won the Super Bowl. They were ranked among the top in defense, but it was almost like last year's Patriots, where the offense carried the team and the defense kind of fed off it.
Mm-hmm.
And for a couple of years, they were pretty good defensively. Then they went right downhill again. There have been so many peaks and valleys with that team defensively. And now through two games, 79 points allowed. I mean, that's just unspeakable.
Yeah, especially in this day.
Cannot win football games when you allow 63 more points than you score. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, of course, the teams that are, 0-2, certainly it's not yet time to panic, because the Giants started 0-2 last year and ended up winning the stinking Super Bowl.
That's right.
So I think, we realize that if you're 0-2, it doesn't mean it's the death knell. Of the teams that are 0-2 that have the best chance to rebound and make something out of this season, to me anyway, I think you probably have to say San Diego's still one of those.
Yeah.
And I'll go out on a limb here and say Jacksonville will probably be a second.
I agree with that, too.
And if there's a third one, if I can pick another 0-2 team that might have a chance to pull themselves out of the abyss here, I'm going to say that maybe the best chance, if they can ever get healthy, would be Seattle.
I agree on all three accounts, John. I think Seattle especially, because that division to me is still a little bit questionable. Arizona's off to a nice start. And Arizona was one of my surprise teams. But again, you look at the rest of the league. Or the division, San Fran, St. Louis.
Right.
Yeah, you said, do you trust Arizona to hold out and stick this out? Well, we'll see. The jury's still out. Seattle has the experience, and they've got the coaching pedigree with Holmgren. I think Ken Wisenhunt's done a nice job in Arizona, and I picked him as my coach of the year. So I'm going to stick with that. But Seattle by no means is out of it. Now, you go elsewhere, and you look at Jacksonville, which I also agree with, but they're in the same division as Tennessee and Indianapolis. So, see, their window's a little bit smaller to me.
Be more difficult for them to rebound.
Right, exactly. And then now, without Vince Young, and we'll see if he ever comes back or what happens there, I'm not sure if Tennessee can hold on. I know the defense is great, probably the best defense in the league through 2 weeks right now.
Mm-hmm.
but can Kerry Collins? They would have to be Raven-esque from 2001. You would need to see 2000 rather. You would need to see the old school Baltimore Raven defense in order to make Kerry Collins a winner at this stage
probably
in his career.
I think so. And it's kind of funny because I heard Jeff Fisher on ESPN radio earlier today talking about, you know, the whole Vince Young, you know, controversy that's going on. He said, you know, what a lot of people don't realize is Vince had an outstanding offseason. And he went on and on about how Vince had really taken great strides to being the kind of not only leader but, you know, quarterback that they need in order to win. And in other words, he had improved his arm angle here and had worked on staying in the pocket and picking and choosing better chances and opportunities which were in the football. They didn't want to stifle him, in other words, because of his just unbelievable athleticism.
Right.
What they wanted him to do was be smarter with it and knowing that, you know, the more you take off and run, the more chance you're leaving open to getting yourself basically killed. Which is what has happened. And then, of course, you have the whole – and he's been frustrated. And so the frustration of going through something that he really has never gone through in his entire professional football career has led to this whole, oh, he's got to be depressed issue. And, oh, he's thinking about committing suicide. And he said that was not true. It was absolutely unequivocally not true. However, with the team still winning, and if the team continues to win, he's not going to rock the boat. So it looks like Kerry Collins is going to get the ball for as long as the Titans continue to win.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
I found it kind of interesting, but it just kind of goes along, the whole theory of not rocking the boat when things are going well. I mean, that's what happened to the Patriots back in 01 when Drew Bledsoe went down. And here's another one for you. You know, and we talked about this and kind of laughed about it, you know, a week ago when we first, you know, signed on for the season. But here it is, you know, the Patriots are rocking and rolling, and Matt Castle's, you know, rolling along. And what if the Patriots get to the Super Bowl, and what if they win it? Then what do you do next year? What do you tell Matt?
You tell Matt, thank you for your services, and enjoy your 3-year deal somewhere else. Because that's what's going to happen. Yeah, because you think about it. I mean, how many more years is Brady under contract for? Yeah. You're not going to get out from under that one, and Castle's going to demand more money, and he can get it elsewhere if he wins the Super Bowl.
He should demand more.
That's what all players want to do.
If he pulls that off,
that's the goal.
I mean, you talk about a guy who's motivated. Here's a guy who's motivated.
It's a contract year, and now he's playing.
Absolutely.
This is a golden opportunity for him to make some big bucks next year, and you're just not going to keep two high-priced quarterbacks here.
So here you go, Patriots fans. If you ever really liked Matt Castle, you better enjoy it now because he won't be here.
The better he does, the greater the chance he's not here. Hey, we've got a great email from our pal Andy in Vermont who says, I'm back, and I don't know where Andy went, but apparently he's back now.
Okay.
So Andy writes, I keep hearing that this offense is built to be high octane, and with Castle they can't do that. But this is not much different to how they started Brady out. Granted, then it was a bunch of mediocre receivers outside of Troy Brown. Keep it simple and safe, and I think they will open it up when they need to, versus defenses that really try to shut down the screens and dunks. Castle has a good arm and can chuck it. They're not expecting him to be Brady, and that's good. And the fans need to know this. The real difference between Brady and Castle's field vision and the ability to decipher that and manipulate a defense. He is learning, though. I agree with that. I think there is a difference in field vision. I think the biggest thing is accuracy, because I think Castle's got a great arm, but I think his throws downfield are not quite as accurate as Brady's have been in the past.
Well, that would be difficult to attain, I think.
When you don't get to do it.
Yeah, that takes reps more than anything else. Anything else that a quarterback does, handing off the ball, hitting the dink and dunk, reading defenses. If you want to be accurate at throwing the deep ball, you got to throw it a lot. That's just, that's the same thing as, trying to drive the ball 300 yards. It takes a heck of a lot of practice.
I'm encouraged so far, though, with Castle's field vision and his decision-making, because I thought a lot of people kind of complained that they held back things on Sunday, they didn't throw deep, but they tried to take Randy Moss out of that game. The Jets doubled him all day.
They did.
And Castle didn't force it, and that's what you want. That's a positive.
Well, you know, that's why I kind of laughed when, I heard a lot of the, Monday and Tuesday quarterbacking here basically saying how they kind of dumbed it down for him. That couldn't have been further from the truth. That was their game plan. And as Coach Belichick explained on Patriots Monday, the Jets were rolling the safety over to double on Moss. So he was really not anywhere even near being in the play on most downs. And so Castle simply took advantage of what was there, which is why Wes Welker had the receptions that he did.
Exactly. Falk had four catches.
Yeah, and you'll recall that, there were several games last year that that was exactly the case for Brady, where, the short passing game was open, and they just sliced and diced teams with that. And I thought Castle did a pretty good job of recognizing that. And frankly, here's the other thing. People don't realize that, Matt has had an opportunity now to work with Tom for 3 years coming into this year, right? 3 years.
Yes.
He worked in his shadow. He's been his apprentice. He's worked with him every day in practice. He's been in every team meeting and every quarterback meeting. He's listened to what not only Tom says, but what Josh McDaniel says, what Bill Belichick says, what the offensive running backs and the receivers say. And he's had a chance to, you know, put some of this to practice on the field, in practice rather. But now he has his chance to step up and make it happen for real. Add to this the equation that Tom was around in practice for a little bit last week, you know, when he was in some of the meetings, and we have every reason to believe that is going to continue to be the case this year, that he wants to help, that he wants to contribute even though he can't contribute on the field, which I think will do nothing but help Matt Cassel continue to be the best kind of quarterback that he can be. Now, I'm not saying that he'll be the next Tom Brady, but I think, you know, I think he's got a lot of things going for him, and I don't think he's the type of guy, he's a smart kid, I don't think he's the type of guy that's going to take too many stupid chances.
No, and I think to get back to your point about Brady mentoring him, I think that's okay, but I don't think you want him in his ear too much over the course of the season, because you kind of want to give him the freedom to run the team the way he needs to run it, because he is his own individual.
He'll definitely do that.
And he will, because right now, I mean, the reason Brady's here so much is because he hasn't had the surgery yet.
Right.
So, I mean, once he does, it's going to be a rehab period where he's not going to be able to come in here and walk around and sit down for 4 hours at a staff meeting.
Well, his job will be to get healthy.
Right, and that's what he has to do. So I think that's, it's a good and a bad, I think. And the good is going to be that he can have him now to help him out. And also the positive is that when he has to leave and he can't be here, Cassel will now have the chance to do this on his own. And I think he has to have that opportunity, because that helps his psyche as well.
No doubt about it.
Andy also chimes in asking us about the power rankings and says, how are the Patriots so low and the Saints or Colts ranked higher? Maybe because his offense was so explosive last season. And that was kind of getting back to what I said about the expectations and how you set the bar high 1 year. And then people often compare you to your former self and not the rest of the league. And I think that happens with this team a lot because of their past success. Anything less now than 16-0 and 14-2 is going to be looked at as a down year.
A big drop off.
And that's not always fair, because there will not be another 16-0 team this year, but they may not even be a 14-2 team. We don't really know yet.
Well, I agree with the Saints. I don't think the Saints should be ahead of them.
The Colts shouldn't either.
The Colts?
Absolutely not.
I don't think the Cardinals should be ahead of them. No, I don't think any of those. I mean, if I were going to put the Patriots in the rankings right now, honestly, based on snapshot after week two, I think I'd put them about 6 or 7.
I was going to say the exact same thing. 6 or 7 sounds fair. The only 1-1 team I could see cracking the top 10 would be Philly.
Yeah,
Philly has looked explosive.
I would agree with that.
But the reason,
they
but you know what?
To be there.
The reason they're not the 2-0 is because their defense. They gave up a lot of points, and they gave away that game on Monday night.
I would think about the Colts at 1-1 cracking that top 10 as well, because Peyton Manning literally willed his team to that win.
Yeah, but they were dominated in their opener, and the Eagles haven't been dominated yet.
That's true.
They've played two. They blew out St. Louis, and they were very competitive against Dallas.
Slight advantage then to the Eagles in that regard. Sure,
yeah.
I would go with that. In fact, I would put the 1-1 Colts right now over the 2-0 Titans, over the 2-0 Cardinals, maybe even over the 2-0 Panthers.
Maybe the Panthers.
Maybe.
I think, but Tennessee has been dominant defensively, and you look at who is the second team we just said?
Cardinals.
The Cardinals, again, dominant defensively, great point differential, plus 31. They have outplayed it. Indianapolis was, again, Indy was dominated by Chicago at home and dominated through three quarters by the Vikings before pulling that out.
Mm-hmm.
They have not been impressive at all to me, at all.
No. Well, I think it's fun to talk about, and I guess we all realize that, you know, nothing is exact here. It's not an exact science, but I just, the whole thing never ceases to amaze me over how perception exists outside of our own little, you know, insular world here in Patriots Nation, how the Patriots are perceived. And I think you kind of hit on it, Mike, because the Patriots have been so unbelievably competitive and good over the past several years, that anything short of that, even though they're 2-0, which would indicate that they're still decent, but anything short of the dominant performances that they've had on the field over the last few years is considered a slight, and it gives other teams a chance. And I just, you know, if you do the side-by-side, team-by-team, almost player-by-player comparison, I think it's a joke that the Patriots are stuck in the middle of the pack in a lot of these power polls.
You know what else might play a factor, too, is the strength of schedule so far.
Well, that's
beaten two bad teams. Not bad teams. The Jets are expected to be a playoff team.
If we were talking about college basketball RPIs, then I would agree with you. But this is no college basketball RPI we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, not agreeing with what they're doing, but trying to maybe tap into their thought process a little bit.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, let's face it. If man, I was thinking about this the other day. If there was ever a year for the Patriots to get a break on the schedule, this would be the year.
After what they had to go through last year with 16-0.
I know. That's what I'm saying. So, you know, while we were maybe poo-pooing the schedule a little bit before the season started, thinking, oh, well, you know, I mean, there's really no reason the Patriots shouldn't win 13 or 14 again because the schedule's so easy. And then Brady goes down and people are saying, oh, this is a 7-9 team or maybe an 8-8 team at best. I'm like, what are you thinking here? Look at the schedule. Look at the schedule and tell me where you think the losses will occur. I frankly did not see, I mean, and I said this last week when we opened the show, Mike, I don't think this team is any worse than 10-6. I really don't.
I was looking at 8-8 or 9-7. And the thing is, I at the beginning of the season with Brady had them at 13-3. I don't think Brady and Castle, the difference is just four victories. You follow what I'm saying?
Well, that's what it basically boils down to. You're saying that Tom Brady is worth four more wins. I don't think that at all. I think we're not giving enough credit to the rest of the team and the system in place.
Well, that's true. And if defensively they can stop people and on special teams they can dominate, then yes. But here's the thing. What's going to happen, you go into the fourth quarter in a hostile environment on the road, well, you're down, you're trailing. Can Matt Castle lead you back?
Well, there you go. There's a couple of extra losses compared to last year, but we're still talking about, you know, the difference between 13-3 and 10-6 is only three games.
Yeah,
and there's an opportunity there, I think, to win those as well as there is to lose those because you got the other team, you know, factored in. I mean, turnovers and special teams and field position, all the great equalizer on the field. You know that as well as anybody else. So, you know, I just think that there's an opportunity here. Certainly while there's an opportunity for the other teams in the AFC, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
I just think that there's an opportunity here for the Patriots, as I've suggested all along, and I will maintain this right to the end of the year. There's an opportunity for the Patriots really to use this psychologically. In fact, in a warped sort of way, this is really pretty cool for the team because they always look for that psychological edge. Well, you know, they had to go to a real extreme to get it.
Well, I don't know if it's
but
cool.
They found it.
I don't know if it's a cool thing or if it's a positive, or as Fred Kirsch wanted to say, maybe the break they needed 1 week. I'd heard that the one, and I got on Fred for that a little bit. But
well, it's not exactly a break that you want to have.
No,
nobody wants anybody to get hurt. But
I think without Brady getting hurt, they would have found some source of motivation somewhere. And if they didn't find it, they would have made it up.
Well,
in all honesty.
But that's what this team is so good at doing. Now they don't have to make it up. Now
they have it now.
It's been served to them on a silver platter.
See, my point when all this happened was that if the defense wasn't better than it was last year, this team was in a lot of trouble. And that's why I wrote in this week's edition of PFW in the commentary is that it's now the defense's turn to carry the team. Last year it was the offense. And even Richard Seymour admitted that. So it's not just what we saw, but players have admitted that. Yes, the offense carried us. They gave us 21, 28-point leads, and it made it easier for us to play defense. There is no doubt about that. That's a fact. You cannot deny that. Now,
that's true.
This year there aren't going to be as many 28-0, 21-3 leads, I don't think. And if there aren't, it's up to the defense to come out from the start, force a couple of three and outs, get a big turnover in the first quarter, a fumble recovery, set up on a short field, and you set the tone now. Now it's your turn to set the tone. If they can do that, then this team can make the playoffs.
But wouldn't you agree that we've seen at least some signs
so
of
far,
that because
so good.
Of the red zone defense
absolutely.
The first 2 weeks?
That's the biggest change. Last year they were terrible in the red zone. This year through two games, two key stops, that's exactly what you want to see right now. That's as much as you could ask for right now.
Who defensively has surprised you in what you've seen with the team in terms of their ability to come up and begin to make plays and assume sort of a kind of a leadership role in there. And this is amongst some of the newcomers, which we have, you know, two or three that are, you know, getting significant time.
Well, normally I would say Gerard Mayo because he's been on the field for every snap, but we had some kind of hint during the preseason that this was going to be the case. So my bigger surprise would be Ellis Hobbs, who I think is carried over from last year, despite the injuries, is now making plays out there because we watch him in the preseason. And I swear every play, John, he's 10 yards from the ball.
Mm-hmm.
He's nowhere near the receiver. Now all of a sudden, he is up on the receiver. He's getting his hands in there. He's making plays. He's got two picks through two games. I believe there was a stat where he has four picks in his last five games going back to last season. He's starting to play some good football, and I've never been big. I don't think he's a terrible football player, but I've never been big on Ellis Hobbs as a number one shutdown corner. Right now, through 2 weeks, he is replacing Asante Samuel, and he has played like a shutdown corner.
He had an outstanding game against the Jets.
He was all over the field.
That was the best game I've ever seen.
He was in on so many plays. Yeah. He had his hand on the ball, did a great job. If he can keep doing that, he's going to be okay.
Now, as far as the other cornerback is concerned, which, of course, I think a lot of fans and a lot of people would agree that, you know, certainly the cornerbacks, the secondary in particular, would have had to have been a perceived weak point coming in. Certainly be part of the reason because of Asante Samuel and Eugene Wilson leaving the team. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if someone like Delta O'Neal continued to get more and more time over there. And I'm not denigrating Lewis Sanders.
Right.
Well, I think it's a little bit of a surprise, actually, with some of his early playing time. But I think that position might actually end up being stronger than originally intended, which is part of the reason why we're not seeing guys like Wheatley and Wilhite over there as much.
It's funny. I thought Wheatley was the guy when Fernando O'Brien got cut.
So did I.
And a lot of us agreed on that. But then all of a sudden, Wheatley was a special teamer in week one and inactive in week two. Then we had Lewis Sanders starting, and then Delta O'Neal, which I kind of saw coming with the way Bill Belichick talked about it during the week, that if Delta keeps learning the system, he will be in there and get more playing time, and now he is. And he had a great game against the Chiefs, making a couple of heads-up plays, particularly in the red zone at the end. So right. I think he has earned that playing time. That position really has been kind of a revolving door. I think O'Neal could settle in there and give a few weeks where he would start, and if they want to make a change, they have the people and the personnel to do so. You know, the front seven's made the big difference to me. It's the pass rush. It's Gerard Mayo's presence. It's establishing the line of scrimmage and your presence up front. And when you do that, as we all know in football, it makes it a little bit easier for the secondary to make plays.
Absolutely.
And that's what they have to do because, I think there are some question marks. We'll see what Hobbs does long term. We'll see how that other cornerback spot shakes out. We'll see how if James Sanders can make some improvements because I've been a little bit down on him through a couple of games. Can Rodney Harrison keep playing at a high level? And as far as backups, all you have is Merriweather. You don't have a lot of depth at the safety spot. So all that, you take all that and you put it in the pot. If the front seven does its job, you can mask some of those problems. I think that's what the Giants did last year, John.
Right.
Giants didn't have a great secondary last year.
That's right.
They were in tatters at times, but the front seven of the pass rush was phenomenal.
I think Aaron Ross is a pretty good player, though.
Well, but he's a young player. He's a young player, and there are some up-and-comers there, and I've never been big on a guy like Jabril Wilson, who thankfully is gone. You know, there are some guys back there who are R.W. McQuarters, who I thought, and Sam Madison, who are liabilities to me. But they made plays in the playoffs, John, because their front seven was doing its job.
Absolutely.
And that's what the Patriots need to do.
I think we all know that, Mike, that a pass rush certainly makes a secondary a heck of a lot better than it really may be. It's easier. If you don't have to stay with a player, don't have to stay with a receiver
right.
for as long, then you're obviously going to be a much better player.
When the quarterback only has 2 seconds to get rid of the ball,
that's right.
It's hard to complete passes.
That's exactly
what it comes down to.
Okay. Hey, Mike, thanks for the hour again today. It's great.
Hey, no problem, John. It's a lot of fun being here.
Always super to have you in here talking some X's and O's and everything else that's going on. And I will see you around the stadium later this week.
Yeah, Sunday afternoon.
We got a little football on
a little football game there?
Absolutely.
Breakfast is on me.
Thank you. Thank you. For once, hey, that's great. Thank you. Mike Perini, of course, covers the Patriots for Patriots Football Weekly. He's on the PFW in Progress. He joined us here inside Patriots Playbook on Wednesdays every week. And we're going to take a timeout right now, but we're going to throw out the question again. Email question of the day, webradio@patriots.com. Number one, who is your number one team right now through 2 weeks in the NFL? Who's at the top of your power ranking? And who's the biggest surprise? Who's the biggest overall team surprise after a couple of weeks in your estimation? And that can be in a positive sense or it can be in a negative sense. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482, again, is the telephone number. We'll get to some emails. We'll continue to run over some things that we have on tap for today. And also coming up in the second hour of the program, Vic Carucci, the national editor for NFL.com, senior national editor for NFL.com. He will join us, plus our conference calls with Chad Pennington and Tony Sperano of the Miami Dolphins, all coming up in hour two, right here inside the Playbook.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas Tree Shops, Off-Broadway Shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and the long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
This is former quarterback Steve Grogan
and former linebacker Steve Nelson.
We want to tell you about the game with the greats.
Are you one of those old diehard fans who remembers our playing days, like the 1985 Super Bowl or the snowplow kick?
Maybe you just want to meet the newest members of the Patriot Hall of Fame, like Ben Coates or my good friend Stanley Morgan.
And Andre Tippett, one of my linebacking brothers. He'll be there too.
You think he'll bring his gold jacket with him?
I hope so. I can't wait to see it on him.
If you're a big-time fan, you won't want to miss the Game with the Greats. It's happening on October 5th at Gillette Stadium when the current Patriots are away at San Francisco.
Get your tickets now at patriots.com/alumni.
Hey, that's pretty good, huh, Steve?
Yeah, we still got it. We should call ESPN. We could be the next Mike and Mike.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas Tree Shops, Off-Broadway Shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and a long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
This is former quarterback Steve Grogan
and former linebacker Steve Nelson.
We want to tell you about the game with the greats.
Are you one of those old diehard fans who remembers our playing days, like the 1985 Super Bowl or the snowplow kick?
Maybe you just want to meet the newest members of the Patriot Hall of Fame, like Ben Coates or my good friend Stanley Morgan.
And Andre Tippett, one of my linebacking brothers. He'll be there too.
You think he'll bring his gold jacket with him?
I hope so. I can't wait to see it on him.
If you're a big-time fan, you won't want to miss the Game with the Greats. It's happening on October 5th at Gillette Stadium when the current Patriots are away at San Francisco.
Get your tickets now at patriots.com/alumni.
Hey, that's pretty good, huh, Steve?
Yeah, we still got it. We should call ESPN. We could be the next Mike and Mike.
How long are the conference calls?
Patriots Playbook, hour number two, here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. Again, thanks to Mike Perretti, who will be a regular Wednesday guest with us in the first hour of the program. Vic Carucci from NFL.com is coming up in just a couple of moments. We also get to the conference calls with Chad Pennington and Tony Sperano, the quarterback and head coach, respectively, of this week's opponent, the Miami Dolphins. Of course, the game coming up 1 p.m. Eastern time, the kickoff at Gillette Stadium this coming Sunday. The Pats try to move to 3-0. We've been talking a little about, and again, the email address, of course, webradio@patriots.com. Phone number 508-543-7482 if you choose to go that route. We've been talking about power polls and power rankings and things, and trying to get your impressions of who you think should be the number one team right now in the NFL after a couple of weeks. Just a brief little snapshot of the 2008 season, and who's the biggest surprise to you, either in a positive or negative sense. Biggest surprise in the NFL after a couple of weeks. And so email us your thoughts there on those particular questions. ESPN.com took it a little further this week as well with a great page two survey, if you will. They ranked from 1 to 32 the ultimate NFL power ranking. In other words, the all-time best franchises. They wanted to know which franchise is the best in the NFL, period, from 1 to 32 over the history of the league. Actually, let me correct that. Since the AFL-NFL merger, which was in the 1970 season, through 2007, last year, the completion of last season. So we're talking basically about a 38 year when you count 1970. It's 38 years of history. Which teams rank 1 to 32? What do you think, just off the top of your head, what do you think the Patriots rank in 1 to 32? 5? 10? 15? Somewhere in there, maybe? Because I think you have to consider that since the AFL-NFL merger in 1970, there were some lean years in there, although there was the 76 season, which was pretty good, and then, of course, you got the 85 Super Bowl season, which is pretty good, and there were some really rotten years there in the late 80s and early 90s, and then, of course, since 1993-94, when Bill Parcells came in to run the franchise, the fortunes, for the most part, by and large, have certainly turned around in a positive sense over the last, 15, 16 years. I can't say that I'm terribly surprised by this. What they did is they basically took regular season winning percentage, and they weighted that heavily to give all of the teams a fair appraisal. Teams that joined the NFL after 1970 are certainly at a disadvantage here in some of the categories. But then, if you look at the other side, they have an advantage in what they're calling negative categories. They had less opportunity to be bad. The formula that ESPN used measured Super Bowl championships and appearances, postseason history, which includes playoff wins and big defeats, also regular season consistency, which is their overall winning percentage, the number of seasons with 12 or more wins, the number of seasons with 4 or fewer wins. It measured all-star power. In other words, number of players selected to the all-pro teams. Overall franchise stability, which includes the number of coaching changes and the number of first-round draft busts. It includes media buzz and fan interest and Monday Night Football appearances, because after all, we realize that if you're on Monday Night Football quite a bit, there's a lot of interest in you. I thought that was an interesting set of criteria that the writers on page two on ESPN.com used to determine the all-time best in NFL power rankings since 1970, which was the AFL-NFL merger. The number one team really shouldn't come as a surprise. I know there'll be some of you that would think, oh, well, it's got to be Pittsburgh or maybe San Francisco. And the number one team is Dallas. The Cowboys, since the merger, they have had, even though I know that there were a couple of lean years in there, but they lead the NFL in Super Bowl berths and in playoff wins during this modern era, and we call the modern era the time spent since the 1970 merger. But they've ranked in the top three in scoring 11 times. They've ranked top scoring defense 8 times since 1970. They've been in the NFC Championship game 14 times in that time period. So it really shouldn't come as a surprise that the Cowboys were at the top of that list. The senior editor for NFL.com is Vic Carucci, and he's been around the block a time or two and could probably talk to this particular poll as well, and he joins us here inside the playbook. Vic, it's great to talk to you again. Thanks for the time.
My pleasure, John. Anytime.
I was kind of leading off, and I'm going to get to your particular power ranking on NFL.com in just a minute, but ESPN did a really good one, I thought, that went a little bit further in ranking the all-time teams since the merger in 1970, and the Cowboys being up at the top of that list. I don't know that too many people would really have a problem with that. Would you?
I wouldn't. I think if you're going to put that kind of list together, it has to reflect consistent excellence. It has to reflect multiple championships. You know, it has to reflect a sense of domination over a period of many years. And, you know, what the definition of many, I mean, you know, I think if you look in the course of a decade certainly multiple decades in the case of when the merger took place, if you can say that particular team has been a at or near the top of the league in the course of that time, then that is your pick. And, you know, when you look at the Miami Dolphins, at the Dallas Cowboys, you know, you can make that argument. Certainly in the 70s, the Steelers, the Dolphins were teams that the 49ers and the 80s, you know, they had their respective runs in certain decades. And you know, I might have leaned toward the Steeler team as being one that for its consistent success. But when I think you look at what Dallas did with its multiple Super Bowl wins in the 90s, is probably what's swaying that particular poll, I would guess. And of course, you can't ignore how the Patriots have owned this decade.
Yeah, the Steelers were actually number two. The 49ers were number three, just for grins and giggles here. The Dolphins were ranked four, Broncos five, Raiders six, Vikings seven, Redskins eight, Rams nine, which I thought was a little surprising. And the Patriots came in at 10th.
Tenth. I'm shocked. I'm stunned by that. That doesn't work for me. I would have had them much. Yeah, I would have put them ahead of the Rams. I would have put them ahead of the Vikings. My gosh, yeah, I like that poll until you told me the Pats were 10th.
Yeah, well, just based on what the Patriots have done in this decade, and I think that's why the Patriots are so low, because they really didn't come to any kind of consistency until the 2000s.
And see, here's the thing: when you get, and these are all subjective and fun, and they're put out there mainly so that you and I and in another city will have a discussion about it. But here's
right.
The point. I think you have to take a look. First of all, define why you have teams where you have them. But in the case of the Pats, it's not an overstatement to say that what they accomplished in this particular decade is special and different from what those other teams accomplished in those other decades, because rules of the game are far different, and the ability to stay good over a period of time, we know this, we've said this over and over again, is you know, much more difficult.
Right. Well, let me go then, Vic, to your weekly poll on NFL.com. And I think we all know that there are probably about five or six power polls out there that a lot of people put credibility into simply because of the source and because it's great, you know, fan fodder during the course of the week. It creates interest around the league. No arguments at all with the Dallas Cowboys being considered largely the best team, although I think you can make a strong case for the Giants at this stage of the game. However, this is where I have to admit it raised my eyebrows when I looked at your current power rankings last night.
Right.
And you had the Patriots as the only team at 2-0 in the middle of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Well, the simple explanation, and I have heard from a good number of folks in Patriot Nation, and I'm
there's
I'm,
a shock.
I'm very no, well, yeah, no, I wasn't shocked, and I'm very happy that they've taken the time to, you know, call me every name in the book and question my lineage and question
about
everything about me, and question also my what you
your
know
sanity.
why do I have a job? Why am I getting paid to do this? And why haven't I been fired by now?
Right.
And not that they overreacted, but that's another. But that's good. That's I love that. The other part, real quick, that I love is that I've been accused of being a Patriot hater, which is the last thing because as I recall, when I was doing a lot of columns that really basically told people to move on from the whole Spygate thing, and basically made my case that they were sufficiently punished. I was called every name in the book by every other team that said, mm-hmm, I love the Patriots too much. So anyway, mm-hmm, you can't win. But
no,
that said,
you
asked me why, and it's a simple answer. I'm not convinced by this particular 2-0. I still don't believe that I'm looking at the same team that I feel is, you know, worthy of where I had them almost the entire season last year at the very top of the poll. Now, some would argue, okay, you don't have to put them at the top, and Patriot fans would agree that they're maybe not the number one team, but why aren't they at least a top 12 team, which is what I have in my ranking as a playoff team? And I see a lot of flaws here, not the least of which is I think the quarterback situation remains something that still hasn't played itself out. There's still more I need to see and know and understand about Matt Cassel before I am, as a lot of people seem to be running with the idea that the Tom Brady story is being rewritten all over again, that it's not just, you know, replace the name and it's starting in the same place. I saw an unconvincing win over Kansas City and a team that showed following week how weak it really was when an inept Oakland team was able to win against the Chiefs. And I saw a very close win over a Jets team that I don't believe at all is going to be a factor in a very big factor in the course of this season, despite Brett Favre's addition. And strategically, I think the Jets probably screwed a couple of things up that should have given them a win over the Pats. So I see an unconvincing 2-0 start so far. I could easily have my mind changed. That's why we do these polls on a weekly basis, and I'm open to that for sure. But if you're asking me how I feel about where they are now, which is what that question is, what I answer each mm-hmm. week in my power poll. I in the case of looking at Buffalo Bills, you know, Pittsburgh Steelers, even the Tennessee Titans, and even the Arizona Cardinals, I'm more believing in those 2-0s as being reflective of how good those teams really are versus a Pats team that I think has benefited greatly by the two opponents they faced.
Okay, fair enough. I'll buy that to an extent. However, is that not sort of underselling the rest of this team, the other 52 players that are not named Tom Brady?
Yeah, you know, there's a risk to doing that, no question. And I think there are some very good players and very great aspects of that team. And let's talk about coaching as well, because mm-hmm. I have the utmost respect for what Bill Belichick is able to do and how he's able to adapt and overcome. And that record is a reflection of that. I don't know, though, that there's going to still be enough to carry a team that is built, in my view, to sort of succeed and dominate with the guy named Brady under center. I think this is a different team, a very different team than the one that was that if you go back to the first couple of Super Bowl wins, and they've been sort of retailored, redesigned to capitalize on the big hits, the big plays, the scoring, and all the things that I think overcome in some respects some issues that could be there on defense. I'm not saying that the defense is flat out a weakness. I just don't know. I'm not sure yet how strong it truly is, because in the course of last year, there were elements of this team that were not tested to the fullest because they didn't have to be. You know, the Patriots mostly didn't barely win games, and then when they did have a couple of struggles, Baltimore being, you know, one that comes to mind, what was the difference in that ball game? And once again, it was the ability of number 12 to make a play to make a couple of huge plays at the very end. And I know there was the benefit of a penalty in there somewhere, but right. You know, that's the Ravens' problem. He delivered. And when I don't see that guy in there to deliver, I'm still not sold that this is going to be the, you know, I'm not saying the same team as last year, but a team that is yet there. I put them in the middle of the pack. I didn't put them at the bottom of the list. And middle of the pack means they can easily climb into playoff contention if I, you know, see more evidence that convinces me of that. Right now, I haven't seen that.
You think Buffalo right now is the better team?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I think the Bills have, you know, I think if we're putting quarterbacks next to each other, I'm willing to take a Trent Edwards, who I think has, and it's only a slight amount more of experience. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to talk it in those terms, but just in terms of what he's displayed, how he's progressed, but more importantly for Buffalo, I'll take that defense. I'll take the Marcus Stroud difference that he's made, the dominant force that he's become and allowed so many others to thrive off of that. I'll take their special teams and what those are able to do and the game-changing, you know, playmakers that are there and Roscoe Parrish and the other, not, you know, just the return men they have, but that, you know, coverage that they supply and their kicking game in general. I think there's a lot that can be counted on there. And I think it's a, you know, I think it is also a well-coached team. I don't know that, you know, Dick Duran and his staff have gotten enough credit for that. But I think if you look at where this team, where the Bills were a year ago, still on the verge of making a playoff after putting 17 guys on injured reserve, that told you something about what the potential was if they also made some additional improvements. And I think they've done that, the necessary additions, as I said, of Stroud, Kavika, Mitchell. And then you know, we saw him for the first time, but James Hardy is coming in and making the remarkable catch in the end zone. But that red zone type play that he made, big 6'5" receiver, is the kind of thing that's a dimension they haven't had before. Well, we've seen it now in week two, and I think it's something the Bills are going to show as the season goes forward.
Okay. One more question about the poll before I ask you go a different direction here, Vic. But in theory, when you're putting your poll together, do you look at this as just a snapshot of a team to this point in time, or do you look at it as this team has this potential from here on out?
No, I look, it's a little of both, but it's mostly how it stacks up in the current, you know, I think you should only deal with the team in its current state and, mm-hmm. and what it can offer today and now. What they've been, the body of work, maybe that first week it comes to mind, but it's not the body of work can't be any wider than what the off-season moves were to put the team, you know, to help certain areas, and certainly your understanding of the team, your perception of what the team is about going into the season through the preseason, and I put zero stock into outcome of preseason games, but just how the team you know, held up. How, you know, are the pieces in place? Are guys healthy that they've brought aboard? Are guys playing? Are the guys they signed as free agents actually in the starting lineup or have regular roles? Because that has a way of changing once they get on the preseason on the field in preseason games or in practice. But what they're capable of, yes, is definitely another aspect, because if I see some things, especially in these first, now that we've got two solid weeks of games, there's a lot I think you can tell about where a team is headed based on some of the strengths. And I'll use Tennessee as an example. Their defensive strength gives me a lot of reason to think that they can go somewhere. And Kerry Collins taking over at quarterback brings stability that, frankly, was, you know, the thing that they didn't have with Vince Young, and that's a sea change for them. You know, not unlike the sea change for the Patriots, except the sea change for the Patriots at quarterback in my view right now, is a big negative. For Tennessee, it could mount into a positive that could take them a long way.
Vic Carucci, senior editor for NFL.com, joining us here inside Patriots Playbook. Vic, obviously there have been a lot of big stories to this point in time in the regular season, and some significant ones, not the least of which would be injuries for a lot of teams, the Patriots notwithstanding. What's your take on the fact that the injuries seem to have been significant for so many teams to this point in time, and do you think that ownership, do you think that those that make the rules in this game will try to do something to address that at all in the offseason?
I don't know that there's much more that can be done. I hear what you're saying, and I would love it that we didn't have to worry about or have those types of things happen. And it's, you know, for sure, it's troubling that you've had marquee talent affected by this. And I happen to be talking to you from Indianapolis today. I'm doing a piece on the Colts, and there are multiple injury problems.
Right.
But you've got a dozen or so regular players that they thought they would have in their lineup, say, from the start of training camp, who are likely not in the lineup, or maybe one or two of them come back this week. But, you know, to go without your starting center for a couple of weeks on an O-line that's had a whole bunch of players within their first, you know, two or three games and a couple of NFL experience can only lead to bad things. And the whole Peyton Manning thing where he didn't play through the preseason and looks like he's just trying to get some timing together with his receiver. But what do we do to solve this? I mean, you know, the argument, you know, let's focus again on Tom Brady. Can you legislate something that would have prevented that hit from taking place? A guy falling, a body leaning, and him standing in place doing what he's supposed to do to throw a ball. I don't know. I mean, we know that there's been, you know, Vince Wilfork was fined for coming in low on a hit that hurt J.P. Lossman last mm-hmm. year. Are those things preventative? What can we do? Can you make the quarterback untouchable? Of course not. Then you're not watching football anymore. And can you, you know, then there's the debate that we saw over this whole Ed Hockley Broncos Charger game call, and some of the concern there, and I've talked to some of the members of the competition committee, they're saying, you know, there's talk about changing rules so that mistake doesn't occur, but in doing that, you could compromise safety because no whistle or a slower whistle means bodies flying after a football, a loose football, and one of those bodies could be that of the quarterback whose first instinct is going to be to recover the ball and save the possession. So I think it's hard, John, to really see how we could make injuries, how we could cut the injuries down. And the fact that Brady and Manning were not part of their team's preseasons, and forgetting somebody else, but I know that there was limited playing time for for some key starters through this preseason, had nothing to do with, you know, length of preseason. But we are talking about extending a season to 17 regular season games and one less preseason game. I don't think health is even going to be the factor there. For many teams, the fourth preseason game, the Bills, for example, had a starting lineup of 21 backups on both sides of the ball. So
wow.
that should give you, yeah, that was a, That should give you a sense of where coaches are with this whole thing, that they've given up on the fourth preseason game. Great. Turn it into another regular season game, but now we have a longer regular season, and health concerns are going to be there just because exposure is always out there. I don't know that we will – if we get too caught up in trying to change and alter rules to help players stay healthier, are we going to recognize the game that we love? That's the only – question there.
Fair enough. Vic, great to visit with you. Thanks for giving us a little time, especially when you're on the road working today, and we'll look forward to visiting with you when you come to Foxborough.
John, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right.
That's Vic Carucci, who again is the senior editor for NFL.com, visiting with us here inside the playbook. You know, I didn't think that you would get any sort of lip service. He gave you the straight shot in terms of why he has the Patriots ranked where he has them ranked on his NFL.com power poll. And, you know, good for you. First of all, bully for you. If you sent him an email that was angry and thinking, what the are you talking about, you know, by rank of the Patriots, solo, good for you. Because you know what? He's listening and he's reading. Now, you might want to do with a little less of the, shall we say, vociferousness that you apply in your email. But you got his attention. So good for you. Good for you, Patriots fans and Patriots Nation and those that responded to the perceived snub of the Patriots, at least in his particular poll. Because let's face it, NFL.com, that is the mouthpiece. That is the league mouthpiece. It's the National Football League. And I don't know where you go for your football news and whether or not it's one of your favorite sites, but I usually do check it during the football season once a day at the very minimum, just to see if they have any stories that maybe some of the other services that I look at don't have. And a lot of people take them seriously. A lot of people look at it as the standard bearer in terms of NFL news, and certainly the power rankings go right along with that. And so for the NFL and someone like Vic Carucci, who has his experience covering the league formerly from the Buffalo News, and he covered the Bills as their beat writer for a number of years before he went to work for the league. A lot of people really think he's very credible. Whether or not you agree with him or not isn't the point, but he's got great credibility all around the country. And I've had the chance to speak with him in several formats, and ESPN radio and things along those lines too, in terms of trying to get what he has and his expertise. And so I have to admit I'm a little surprised. It seemed to me that there was just a little slight, I don't want to say double standard, but it seemed like there was a different set of rules applied to his definition in putting the Patriots where he has them in the poll. Whereas he said that the snapshot of the team is where he tries to generally rank them week to week. The reason that the Patriots are where they are is because he's not convinced this team has the capability of doing much, at least not now. And so based on where they are now and foreseeing that they might not go someplace else, this is where he has them. Okay, I'll buy that. There's still some work to do for this Patriots team, and I think we all realize that. But I think that those who underestimate the guys on the defensive side of the ball, and I think those who underestimate the other offensive players that were all there receiving passes and taking handoffs and blocking for Tom Brady a year ago, they're still there now. And the guys who are doing the blocking defensively and making the tackles, they're all there now too, and arguably improved. I don't know how much more you're going to have to go. Maybe it'll take the San Diego game in a few weeks. It'll certainly, I think, point to the November 9th game, I think it is, without looking at the schedule, November 9th game against Buffalo, when the Patriots get a chance to play Buffalo for the first time this year, and they get them in Foxborough the first time around. That looms as a very large game. All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll try to share some emails and some other news and notes that we have for you today, and then we'll get into our conference calls as we turn our attentions toward this Sunday's opponent and the Miami Dolphins, Chad Pennington quarterback, Tony Sperano head coach, all coming up right here inside the playbook.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, Off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and a long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
This is former quarterback Steve Grogan
and former linebacker Steve Nelson.
We want to tell you about the game with the greats.
Are you one of those old diehard fans who remembers our playing days, like the 1985 Super Bowl or the snowplow kick?
Maybe you just want to meet the newest members of the Patriot Hall of Fame, like Ben Coates or my good friend Stanley Morgan.
And Andre Tippett, one of my linebacking brothers. He'll be there too.
You think he'll bring his gold jacket with him?
I hope so. I can't wait to see it on him.
If you're a big-time fan, you won't want to miss the Game with the Greats. It's happening on October 5th at Gillette Stadium when the current Patriots are away at San Francisco.
Get your tickets now at patriots.com/alumni.
Hey, that's pretty good, huh, Steve?
Yeah, we still got it. We should call ESPN. We could be the next Mike and Mike.
John
Rook with you inside Patriots Playbook for a Wednesday. Let's turn our attention back now to the Miami Dolphins and this Sunday's opponent, 1 o'clock Eastern time kickoff at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. And, you know, you have to put yourself in the other guy's shoes every now and then. You have to consider where the other team is coming from, and certainly with the way the Dolphins suffered through a 1-15 season and trying to overhaul the entire organization from top to bottom and bringing in a guy like Bill Parcells and bringing in a new head coach in Tony Sperano and ultimately bringing in a new quarterback to sort of be the focal point, to be the face of the franchise. A lot falls on the shoulders of Chad Pennington. Now, the Patriots have the utmost respect for Pennington, and Bill Belichick is going out of his way, and the players this week will undoubtedly continue that thought process to go out of the way to give him the respect that he has earned. And plus, let's remember, when he was the quarterback of the Jets, here's a guy that always had some pretty good games against the Patriots. Yes, the Patriots may have won the game, but he made the game uncomfortable, and he always left you thinking that, you know, with just another minute or maybe another drive or maybe another play, he could have done something to change the outcome. He was always that close. He's like the thorn in your side that just made you uncomfortable and you just wanted to get rid of it and you couldn't wait until it was over. Chad Pennington has that effect on just about everybody he plays, and certainly it has been that way with the Patriots. Now, when you look at that from the Dolphins' perspective, the fans in Miami are already... well, for instance, there's a poll on MiamiHerald.com that says, when should the Dolphins start Chad Henne at quarterback? So see, you're 0-2. You're already falling out of favor. Man, there's already a lot of pressure on your shoulders, right? And now you got to go up against a team like the Patriots who have their own chip on their own shoulder. Let's see what Chad Pennington has to say as he met with members of the Patriots media in this week's conference call.
How's the adjustment been for you so far, Chad, to the new offense down there?
Well, it's exactly that. It's an adjustment. You know, it's been my sixth week here, and you know, I'm learning every day, trying to acquire more knowledge and gain more insight into our offense and trying to execute it better and do as much as I can to get better at it. So it's been a good adjustment, but it's also been different, and just keep working through it.
Does it help to have stayed in the same division, seeing a lot of the same teams again, like the Patriots?
Does it help? Is that what you asked me?
Yeah, in terms of you know, not learning new opponents, you learn your own system, but in terms of preparing for other teams, you got a lot of the same foes.
Well, the you know, staying in the AFC East does help with preparation for the opponent. You know, I've played all of these teams and seen these teams for be my ninth year, so you know, I understand how each of the AFC East teams like to play and what they like to do and how they like to attack. And you know, my biggest challenge is being able to take that knowledge and apply it to our offense here, and you know, learn the details of our offense, trying to make our offense work.
You're going a lot to the tight end so far in two games. Is that just because it's you like what you see out there? Is it a reflection on your knowledge of the offense, that maybe that's an easier throws right now?
No, it's just been that has been who's been open and where the single coverage has been. I think you know, we have two tight ends that do a great job of getting open and finding areas, and so you know, the coverage as far as the single one-on-ones have been with the tight ends and things like that, and so that's where the ball has been dictated to go. But you know, I just try to take each read as its own entity and get the ball to the open guy and not get focused in on one guy.
Chad, as you've assimilated into this offense, how much of what you've been able to do has been just based upon your own natural football instincts, you know, taking over in certain instances?
Well, that's always the fine line, you know, trying to understand the details of the offense you're working in, and then also letting your instincts take over and just being a football player and a quarterback and trying to mesh those two together. You know, at the end of the day, football is football, and a lot of times you have the same routes and concepts. You just call them a little bit differently, but still trying to mesh the footwork and all the different details of this offense with our play so the timing can be better and the efficiency can be better.
Chad, you have so many people on this team that are new this year. Does that help that you're all going through this together, sort of learning together, or does that make it even more complicated that so many people are learning the system?
Oh, I think it's it helps and it makes it more complicated. You know, when you're trying to put so many different new parts together, we are all in this together, and we're going through the same type experiences, which is a good thing. We're learning together, but at the same time, it can definitely make it more complicated because we're trying to learn each other, and not only on the field but off the field, and get to know your teammates, because that's so important. I think a lot of times in the game of football, the relationship side is overlooked, and a lot of the times the results that happen with the good stats and the good numbers happen because of the relationship side, not necessarily because of the talent side.
You mentioned relationships. You had a pretty good one with the guy on this team now, Randy Moss, when you guys were at Marshall. What do you remember most about him, both as a player and just as a person?
Well, he's always been an extreme competitor. It didn't matter what we were doing at Marshall, whether it was a one-on-one drill or basketball over at the gym or whatever it was. He's an extreme competitor, and he wants to be the best at it and win. I mean, it's always been that way. And, you know, as far as a friend, he's always been a good friend. I think he has a big heart. And, you know, through the years, he's, you know, started to come back to Southern West Virginia and do a lot of great things there and really give back. And, you know, I think he does have a big heart.
Does it surprise you at all to learn that he was voted a captain of this team this year?
No, not at all, because I think it would surprise other people. But, you know, I've known Randy for a while, and you know, I've seen the true Randy. I think some people's perception of Randy is a little off, and I know, you know, as far as Randy and his heart and what he wants to do and what he wants to accomplish, he's right on the money with it, and it's all good.
It's surprising to learn that Randy decided to start up a truck team in NASCAR.
Am I surprised?
Yeah.
No, I'm not surprised. I think people don't realize how country he really is. So, being from Southern West Virginia, you know, he has a lot of country roots and things like that. So.
Chad, this is a little bit off beat. Were you a captain at Marshall?
Yes.
You were? All right. Can you kind of explain, because I think it's different at every level of football, how different being a captain in the NFL is from other levels and how maybe the responsibilities are different?
Well, I think the obvious difference is you're not dealing with college kids, and you know, you're dealing with men and professionals. And so, you know, how you lead, there are some core characteristics in how you lead, whether it's by example or what you say or and what you do on and off the field. And on the professional level, you're dealing with men. You're dealing with men that have been in the game and understand how to be leaders and be professionals. And then you're also dealing with younger players who are just learning. So I think being a captain in a professional team, on a professional team, you have to learn how to mesh those two together, your young players with your older players, and get everyone to work together, because the discrepancy in ages are so much different compared to college, where normally you're dealing with 18 to 22-year-olds in college. In the pros, you can be dealing from 22 all the way up to 40. So it's a lot different.
Are there any responsibilities that you have as a captain that are different than they were either in high school or college?
I think some of the responsibilities are definitely similar. It's how you deal with those responsibilities and how you handle those things. That would be the biggest difference in the type of people and the age group that you're dealing with. But, you know, the similarities as far as, you know, leading by example, knowing when to speak up and address the team, knowing when not to speak up. You know, and then obviously the number one thing, as a captain and as a leader, you have to come to play. You know, the result on the field starts the whole process, and they have to be able to depend on you physically and mentally on the field, and you have to be able to produce.
Chad, did you, I mean, as this whole Brett Favre saga was unplaying, did you ever imagine it would kind of, you know, have an impact on you? And when you were, you know, were sent to the, you know, when you left to go to the Dolphins, did you express any anxieties about starting over, you know, all over again?
Well, you know, I was prepared for whatever happened in New York. You know, I was in New York for 8 years, and nothing surprises you after 8 years, and then with the 2 weeks leading up to the decision being made, I had prepared myself, and I felt like I was prepared both mentally and physically to handle whatever came my way. Once the decision was made, then I had to take a look at what was best for me as a professional and also for my family, and be able to make a sound professional decision. And I just felt like, you know, coming to Miami, being able to help lay the groundwork and build the foundation for what Coach Sperano wants to do, I was interested in that opportunity and excited about it.
Mm-hmm. Here's just another general question, Chad. Why in your mind, why do you believe there might be such a high failure rate for first-round quarterbacks, especially those in the top 10?
Well, I think, judging talent is always at the hands of the beholder, the guy who's trying to pick the talent out. And so that's a human opinion. And we all know human opinions vary at all different times. And then also, I think the second reason is because of just the situation. Some young quarterbacks can handle being thrown in there early. Sometimes some young quarterbacks can't handle being thrown in there early, and it's a detriment to them. So we're dealing in the human experience. We're not dealing with robots or people that don't have feelings and emotions and things like that. And that's why you see such a variance, in the production of quarterbacks.
Chad, what's your impression?
A couple more guys, then we got to get to a meeting. Thanks.
What are your impressions of Jake Long?
I think Jake is a big-time talent. I think he's got a chance to be just a mainstay in this league at left tackle. He brings so much to the table as far as his physical presence and what he's able to do athletically and mentally. I mean, he has a lot of passion for this game, and he wants to do well, and he wants to succeed. And so I'm really excited about him being here.
How much of a concern for you is the Patriots' pass rush, the outside guys, Thomas and Vrabel? You've seen them countless times.
Yeah, well, they do a great job. I think what they've done a great job over the last 3 to 4 years is generating a pass rush with 3 and 4 guys. 7, 8 years ago, it was always with 5 and 6 guys, and now they can do it with just 3 or 4, being able to push the middle of the pocket and also rush the edges. And so, which allows them to, play coverage behind it, and it makes it tough on a quarterback. And so, we've got our hands full, and they're known to play good defense, good solid sound defense. They don't beat themselves, and they're extremely tough. And so, it's a big time challenge.
Hey guys, thanks. We've got to get into a meeting, and we'll call with you, Coach Sperano, a couple of minutes.
All right, so there you go. That's Chad Pennington, the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. And by the way, in that web poll that the Miami Herald did, talking about when should Chad Henne replace Chad Pennington as quarterback, 41% of the voters actually said wait until next season, as opposed to wait until the halfway point of this season, which was the next best at about 30%. So I think there's an eye toward the future, but I think for right now, I think most Dolphins fans at least seem to think that Pennington is going to be here, so we just might as well, live with him and hopefully get something out of him. We'll wrap it up today by telling you tomorrow's program, first and foremost. We'll be back here, same Pats time, same Pats channel tomorrow. Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator, will be with us for his regular Thursday visit. And, of course, Eric Scalavino will visit from PFW tomorrow to talk a little football and get into some X and O's about the Dolphins in particular on Sunday. Tony Sperano is the brand-new head coach, first-year head coach of the Miami Dolphins, of course, in his first year there after spending some time at Dallas when Bill Parcells was there. Yeah, it seems like Soprano, doesn't it? Every time I see his name written, I want to say Tony Soprano. But it's Sperano, I know. It's weird. If only he had as much influence as Tony Soprano, then maybe the Dolphins wouldn't be 0-2 and staring into the abyss already for 2008. The Dolphins have a lot of problems. Chad Pennington being the quarterback, or Chad Henne being the quarterback, notwithstanding. Defensively right now, the secondary is not in good shape, and that seems to be the overriding thing that I think about when I look at the Miami team at this early juncture of the season.
After 2 weeks, the Dolphins were already 32nd out of 32 teams, dead last in the league in yards per pass play allowed. And they gave up a 75-yarder and a 79-yarder this past week in their 31-10 loss to Arizona. They're already tied with Denver and Seattle for allowing the most pass plays longer than 20 yards this season. They've given up nine that long. So if there was ever a team, and I mentioned this yesterday a little bit to Brian Lowe, but if there was ever a team for the Patriots and a guy like Matt Castle to go vertical on, this might be the week. And just how does Tony Sparano...
He's a judge coach, sweetie.
Yeah, how does he attack that, and how many other problems does he have to juggle here? We'll leave you today with the head coach of the Miami Dolphins visiting with members of the Patriots media, Tony Sparano.
Hello.
Hey, Coach.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, Tony, it's Albert. How you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you.
Got a lot of people coming up here?
I sure do, yeah.
How many people are coming to the game with you, or for you?
I think they'll probably be... I don't know, maybe 18, 20, somewhere in that range.
This is a little bit offbeat, Tony, but when you're and since you've coached at the college level, been a head coach at that level, is there a difference what a captain is at the pro level and other levels of high school?
A captain?
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think that in my mind... No, there really isn't a whole lot of difference. So, I mean, a captain, in my mind, is a guy that, you know, elected by his teammates to be their spokesman. And, you know, whether that's high school, whether that's college, whether that's the pros, I don't see that being much different. I think that, you know, they're the voice of the team.
Tony, between the draft picks, free agents, guys picked up in waivers and trades. You got over two dozen guys that are in their first year with the Dolphins. How difficult and what kind of challenges does that present to assimilate that many people into the program all at once?
Well, I'll tell you where the difficult part of the thing is you know, you have guys from certainly different, you know, several different teams, one way or the other, and you're meshing them with guys that were, you know, were here for several years in some situations. And I think that the difficult part of it all is just, you know, learning how to practice together, learning how to do those type of things. I mean, you know, we really had to start all over again that way, learning how to practice, learning, you know, how to get involved in meetings, what the structure was that way. And I think that, you know, when you're trying to take people from a bunch of different, you know, professional backgrounds and bring them all into one situation like that, that's a little bit difficult.
And at this point, 3 weeks into the season, how do you feel that progress has come along for you guys?
I think it's coming along. We're not where we need to be with it yet. You know, I think that it's just still constantly a work in progress. I mean, one of the things that we, you know, certainly do, you know, here is that we constantly move the bottom of the roster. So, you know, it's 3 weeks that we're here now in the season, but we've had new pieces each week. You know, somebody new has come in. So I think when you start bringing, you know, you're continuously bringing new people in, you know, you're having to teach them as well. So, you know, and they have to learn your process for a while.
How is Chad assimilated into your program, into the offense? And have you noticed that he's no longer relying upon football instinct, but, you know, gradually picking things up?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think he's come along really nice that way. I think, you know, certainly from an offensive standpoint, our offense, you know, that has slowed down tremendously for him. From a mental standpoint, he's handling it really well now, and, you know, understands everything that, you know, we need to understand for him to go out and function without having any handcuffs on the game plan, you know, which maybe early in the preseason when we got him, you know, obviously we had to give him bits and pieces as he was learning it, but right now we don't really have to do that.
Tony, I understand you're good friends with Darren Rizzi, the coach at URI?
Yeah, Darren worked for me when I was at the University of New Haven. He's a heck of a coach.
Have you been able to keep track of the Rams a little bit, how they're doing this year with him?
Yeah, I had a chance a little bit. I seen they didn't do very good this week, so I certainly know the feeling myself. So obviously neither of us spoke to one another.
Tony, can you talk a little bit about the, I guess, the New England flavor of your staff there? You've got a lot of guys who are familiar to a lot of people here, at least the
bar. Yeah, and, you know, I think that that's, it was a big part, you know, from my standpoint of putting a staff together. I think when you put a staff together, you want people that, you know, certainly first and foremost are good football coaches. I mean, I could care less where they're from at that point, but I knew, you know, a lot about the people that are here. Of course, Paul Pasqualoni, you know, I mean, I worked with in Dallas, and then George DeLeon, you know, I've had experience with, you know, in and out of New England up there several times. So, I mean, you know, these guys are all part of this whole thing, and you know, it's certainly good to have them here. I mean, we get a chance to talk about home a little bit, which is kind of nice, but more importantly, they're excellent football coaches.
Plus, you have Jim Reed and Mike Mazur.
Sure, Jim Reed, Mike Mazur. I mean, all those guys, who, you know, who have ties one way or the other back there. And, you know, I just think it was important. It was a good mix. You know, some of these guys, obviously, Jim Reed had worked for Paul at one point, and you know, I have a lot of respect for what Jim Reed's done, you know, and with his programs at the college level. And you know, we're trying to teach structure and teach discipline, and at the same time, you know, I think you know, be the best X and O coaches that we can be with our players. And I think that all these guys, you know, bring that to the table in one way or another.
Did the watching the film, did the Patriot offense look familiar to you, or do you think it changed much without Tom Brady at the helm?
No, I mean, it looked familiar to me, to be honest with you. I, you know, as I started watching it, you know, of course, in the Kansas City game, you pick up where Tom, unfortunately, was, you know, was injured, and, you know, and you see Matt come into the game, and I don't think, you know, I mean, that they really stopped doing what you know, what they were planning to do in that game. I think they just continued, and that's a credit to Matt, you know, and him being prepared. And I think that you know, I seen it even more in the next ball game, you know, in the Jet game, and you know, it doesn't look like to me they're doing anything different that way.
What impresses you about Castle?
I think one of the things that I've been really, you know, impressed with is his arm strength. I mean, the guy can make all the throws. You know, he can get the ball down the field, but more importantly, I was impressed with him coming into a game like that. That was a pretty close game at the time, and his poise and how he handled, you know, some of those situations that occurred during the course of that game.
Do you know Coach Belichick at all through Coach Parcells, by any chance?
You know, I know Coach Belichick a little bit through Coach Parcells, and that would basically be the way.
Hey Tony, when you were in Dallas with Romo there, you saw a guy sit, and obviously Castle's been through the same thing here. What benefit do you think a quarterback gets from sitting for a few years before he's actually playing?
Well, I think you know, one of the things, I think if he can get a chance to, you know, to sit prior to that, is just, you know, being able to see all, you know, how you handle all the critical situations that show up in the game. And I know, you know, I know Coach Belichick. I mean, those guys are so well coached, but I know that they talk about the same things that we talk about with our players and our quarterbacks, and we try to school them on all the situations that could occur during the course of games and game management and all those type of things. And that sounds a little bit like lip service sometimes until you get into the games and you see exactly what all those, you know, all of a sudden you're faced with all those situations. The 2-minute drills, you know, where you need 6 yards at the end of a game to get a first down, and so on and so forth. I mean, you know, the clock management, you see all those things with veteran players like, you know, like Tom Brady, and you get a chance to watch him do those things. And I think that there's no greater experience for young quarterback when he's sitting there than that.
What are your thoughts on this Patriots defense? What are you seeing from the first two game films that makes them so effective?
Well, I just, I mean, you know, we had a chance to play them last year when I was in Dallas. And, you know, one of the things I've always been impressed with their defense, first of all, I mean, they're just so physically strong. I mean, they're big, strong people. And, you know, Vince in the middle. And you know, I have a lot of respect for him and Ty Warren. I mean, Seymour, these players. But, you know, the outside linebackers, I think when you're in that defense, like the Patriots are in or that we're in, your outside linebackers, you know, you talk about setting the edge of the defense. And, they need to be able to do that. They turn everything back into the middle of that defense to the Wolfhawks, you know, and those people, you know, Teddy Bruschi and so on. And I think that Vrabel, you know, and Adelius do a tremendous job that way. I mean, they're two physical guys. The tight ends have a tough day that way. You know, and then the other guy that I just think brings unbelievable energy to that defense is Rodney Harrison. So, you know, I always have.
When you played them last year, Adelius was in the middle. Have you seen a big difference from him playing on the outside now in these first two games this year?
Yeah, to me, he looks like, you know, just when I watch him out there, and that was interesting because, you know, I do remember him being in the middle, and now I see him outside, and, you know, that presence outside is hard because, you know, you take your protection one way and maybe Vrabel ends up on the back, or you take your protection the other way. So what I see is, you know, a guy that maybe looks a little bit more comfortable there, you know, certainly he can pressure that way and he's good enough in the coverage and all those things. So he looks a lot more comfortable and he presents a lot of problems.
What does Wilford have to do to see more action?
Well, I mean, I just, you know, Ernest played a little bit, you know, in last week's game, and, you know, we'll see what we do this week as we get on in the week. But, you know, right now, as a receiving group, you know, or as a football team, I mean, it doesn't really matter one way or the other. Our skilled people all have to make plays, whether it's offensively or defensively. And the guys that make plays are the guys that will play. You know, I'm partial to the guys that make plays.
One of the guys that's going to have to stand up to the pressure from that Patriots defense is Jake Long. How has he come along in his rookie year now, you know, a couple games under his belt now?
Well, Jake, you know, it's a learning experience for Jake. One of the things that I love about the guy is that he's a conscientious guy. You know, he's really a mentally tough guy. So he doesn't really make the same mistake twice. And I think that every game, you know, Jake looks back and, you know, he'll have, you know, a couple of minus plays there one way or the other. And I think that it's, you know, from his end, he works really hard on correcting those things. He doesn't make those mistakes over and over again, and I think that that's a sign of a guy that's going to be a good player.
What were some of the breakdowns in the secondary last week? You let up 270-yard completions. What?
Yeah, and just a lack of communication. So, you know, one of them was a lack of communication. The other 70-yard play, the guy just out-jumped us and caught the ball. So, you know, it's about making a play. And, you know, Larry Fitzgerald made a play in that situation.
Was it a blow losing Donald Thomas?
Yes, it was. You know, certainly it was. But that's part of the game, and, you know, you got to, I mean, we have to go on. So, I mean, you know, Donald did a nice job early on, and, you know, I mean, unfortunately he got hurt. You love to have the kid because I think he was getting better and better. But, you know, he's hurt, and, I mean, I thought our guys stepped up last week and played pretty well.
Is Evan Mathis, you know, ready to go?
Yes, Evan was ready to go last week.
One more question. Coach, got to get to a 2:45 meeting.
That's it, Coach. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.